why would he do something so dangerous before the announcement?
I don't know, Zan held my gaze, but I want to find out.
I nodded, pleased that someone with authority was finally willing to listen to me, but then I thought of something.
If you didn't know I'd overheard Dr. Holtz's call, how did you know to come to me?
Nina reported you were making waves, Zan said, asking too many questions about Dr. Holtz's death. She thought maybe I could keep an eye on you while I was here.
But she didn't ever think you might agree with me. I smiled, pleased by the idea of Nina's plan backfiring.
No, she didn't, Zan said. Unfortunately, Nina isn't the only one who's concerned that a murder investigation would be bad press for MBA. My superiors agree with her.
Even though they run security and we're talking about a murder here?
None of them knew Ronald like I did. And since they were responsible for vetting the Moonies, they don't think it's possible that one of you committed murder. Instead, they think the real problem here is you saying there was a murder at all.
I put another piece of tangerine on my tongue. Somehow it didn't taste as good anymore.
So, they don't want you to investigate?
Zan turned away, as though ashamed.
My official orders are, if anything, to make sure that there isn't an investigation. I'm to quash any suggestion that there was a murder.
That's why you're here? I asked, upset.
No, those are my official orders. But as a member of the security division, I feel it'd be a dereliction of duty not to look into this matter.
I relaxed, feeling better.
However, Zan continued, given that my superiors, and their superiors, don't want me to do this, any investigation will have to be conducted secretly, which is where you come in.
Why?
I can only do so much. As a temp, I don't have all the privileges you do. Therefore, I need your help.
Sure.
I was surprised by how quickly I agreed, given that there was certainly some potential for trouble. But then I figured that if there was a murderer on the loose at MBA, someone ought to be trying to find them. I would have preferred that somebody else do it. But at least I wouldn't be working alone. If trouble cropped up, Zan would be there for me. And truth be told, I was out for more than justice, or my own safety. I was bored out of my skull at MBA. Being asked to aid in a murder investigation was the most exciting thing that had happened to me since I'd arrived on the moon.
What do you need me to do? I asked.
Zan smiled, pleased by my response. If Dr. Holtz didn't walk out that airlock on purpose, then someone forced him to do it. I need to see the security footage of that event.
But that footage is exactly what Nina says proves he wasn't murdered, I countered. She says it's just him going out the airlock solo.
How well do you think you can trust Nina on this? Zan asked.
I frowned.
Not much.
Exactly, Zan agreed.
I'm not saying Nina had anything to do with Dr. Holtz's death, but I'm well aware that she'd rather sweep this whole mess under the rug than look into it. I'll bet there's far more in that footage than she says there is.
I set another piece of tangerine in my mouth.
Since you're in security, why can't you get the footage?
Because this is way out of my jurisdiction.
In fact, my being in security actually works against us. I made the mistake of raising the issue en route here and was shot down by my superiors. Now I have direct orders not to get involved, and I guarantee you they're keeping a very close eye on me. If I try to access the footage, they'll know.
Embarrassment reddened Zan's cheeks. That's why I've been forced to make the, well, let's say, unorthodox decision to come to you for help, rather than anyone else.
I suspect NASA is far less likely to be monitoring your computer activity than that of any adult.
Even though I already told Nina I was suspicious?
Nina's given you an order to back off. You've never disobeyed her before. Your reputation around here is sterling. I'll bet she's already forgotten about you. She has a lot of other things to deal with right now.
There's only one problem, I admitted. I don't have the slightest idea how to access the security footage.
Zan laughed. It caught me by surprise. It was a light, infectious laugh that brightened the whole room like a ray of sunshine.
I figured as much. However, I can be of some help there, and I suspect your friend Roddy might be as well.
I thought back to my recent conversation with Roddy in the toilet stall.
Maybe. He knows how to hack the base computer, but that doesn't mean he'll help me do it.
Well, see what you can do. Once you can access the computers, it shouldn't be too hard to find the footage we need.
I started to peel off another tangerine section, then noticed that my palms were sweaty.
It was all well and good to talk about hacking the base computers to conduct an unauthorized murder investigation.
Doing it was an entirely different story.
I'll try my best, I said.
I appreciate that, Zan told me. I truly do. I know I'm asking you to take a big risk here.
Maybe not, I said, trying to lighten things up. If I get caught, maybe they'll be so upset they'll ship me back to Earth again.
I wouldn't count on it. I think your parents are too vital up here.
Then maybe I ought to break the rules more often.
Zan smiled, but quickly grew serious again.
Just so you know, we don't have much time to do this. The rocket returns to Earth in 2 days. If we haven't caught the murderer by then, you'll be stuck here with whoever it is for another month, or more if the next rocket is delayed.
I hadn't thought of that. Is there even any way to lock someone up here?
Not that I'm aware of, Zan sighed. I don't think it ever occurred to anyone.
I suppose there's a way to barricade someone in their room, but you'd have to let them out any time they needed the bathroom. On the whole, it'd be much better if I could escort our killer back to Earth.
But if you're not supposed to investigate, won't NASA flip when you suddenly arrest one of the Moonies?
If and when we have proof, I think they'll change their tune, no matter how bad the PR is.
Zan glanced at her watch and stood.
Sorry, but I've spent too much time here as it is. People are going to start wondering where I am.
I got to my feet and met her by the door.
Thanks, I said.
For what?
Wanting to find out what happened to Dr. Holtz.
I should be thanking you for that.
Zan reached for the door, then seemed to think of something and turned back to face me.
I hate that I have to say this, but for your safety, we need to keep our alliance a secret. You can't let anyone know we're working together, or that I've even come to you. In fact, it's probably best if you don't even let on that we've met at all. Don't mention my name to anyone. If anyone asks you about me, say you haven't met me yet.
Even my parents?
Even your parents. This is a very small community, and gossip will travel through it quickly. If there is a murderer, I don't want them having any idea you're involved in this. To that end, don't come to me with anything. I'll come to you.
But what if I find something important? I asked.
I'll be keeping a close eye on you, Zan told me. It won't be hard to do in quarters as tight as this.
Though be aware, our target will be able to keep a close eye on everyone as well. Both of us need to exercise extreme caution. Speaking of which, no one should see me leaving your room.
Right. I opened the door and checked the catwalk. No one was outside.
Coast is clear.
I'll be in touch.
Zan gave me a wink, then slipped out and quickly ducked around the corner. I closed the door behind her, wondering what I'd gotten myself into.
Excerpt from the Official Residence Guide to Moonbase Alpha, copyright 2040 by National Aeronautics and Space Administration. Visitors. As a lunar knot, you are probably aware that there will occasionally be visitors at Moonbase Alpha. In fact, there would be no MBA without the funds provided by space tourism. Be aware, our visitors' commitment to MBA is just as strong as yours, so don't think of them as tourists. Consider them investors in the International Space Program. And though our guests are not official employees of NASA or their families, remember, they still have undergone a rigorous selection process and extensive training for their visit, just like you. The visitors have strict instructions not to get involved in or interfere with the day-to-day workings of MBA. It is requested that all lunar knots return the favor and provide our guests with the highest quality lunar experience possible. To that end, please do not bother, harass, or pester the visitors in any way. Ask the visitors for money or employment after your stint at MBA ends. Enter the visitors' quarters without their express permission. Spread gossip, rumors, or idle hearsay about the visitors. Thank you for your cooperation.
Currently, tourism is slated to provide 51.2% of the working budget for MBA. That adds up to billions of dollars a year coming from the private sector, rather than taxes.
Chapter 7. Space Jerks. Lunar Day 188. Afternoon. I had to find Roddy. I didn't know how to hack the computer and dig up the security footage on my own. Now that Nina and everyone else were distracted by the arrival of the new Moonies, I figured Roddy would probably have returned to the rec room to play VR games. Sure enough, I found him there, jacked in as usual. Unfortunately, I also found Patton and Lily Sjoberg. The Sjobergs and their parents were the first lunar tourists. Since Moonbase Alpha ended up costing more than 5 times what NASA had originally projected, the agency was forced to get additional financing from Space Tourism. Maximum Adventure Travel ponied up the money in return for two concessions. One, a residence at MBA would be converted into a deluxe lunar hotel suite. Two, Maximum Adventure had the exclusive rights to charge incredibly wealthy people staggering sums of money to come stay at Moonbase Alpha. In truth, the deluxe lunar hotel suite isn't that deluxe. There was no way to deliver anything particularly fancy to MBA, like nice mattresses or jacuzzi tubs. The suite has an actual window, and the slim screens are slightly higher quality than ours, but other than that, it's as lame as every other room at MBA. The tourists still have to eat the same awful food we do and use the same sadistic toilets. And yet MBA is the only place for tourists to stay on the moon, so incredibly rich suckers are lining up to shell out big bucks to come here. The Sjobergs outbid hundreds of other elite families in a silent auction, spending what's rumored to be more than $500 million to be the first lunar tourist family. The money bought them a 4-month stay at MBA, which they were already 4 weeks into. Hard as it is to believe, $500 million isn't much money for the Sjobergs. They are some of the richest people on Earth. Lars, the father, made his fortune in deep-sea oil drilling. Sonja, the mother, inherited half of Norway. Together they have so much money, they've run out of ways to spend it. They have more homes in more countries than anyone can count, a fleet of private jets, a solid gold bathtub, and a pet snow leopard named Shotzi. They've already visited every place on Earth, so when the chance came to go to the moon, they jumped at it. Unfortunately, just like the rest of us, they discovered Moonbase Alpha wasn't what they'd hoped. But even if MBA had been absolutely incredible, with fancy suites and gourmet meals, I still doubt the Sjobergs would have been happy. They're spoiled rotten. Back on Earth, servants did everything for them. And I mean everything. They had cooks, gardeners, butlers, dog walkers, maids, doormen, barbers, decorators, masseuses, stablemen, pool boys, and art curators. But since there were only 4 seats available on the rocket, there was no way for them to bring even a single butler to MBA. So for the first time in their lives, the Sjobergs had to do things for themselves. And they hate it. They've been so pampered, none of them has the slightest idea how to work anything, no matter how simple. On the first night at MBA, Lars Sjoberg nearly lost a finger trying to use a can opener. Once they learned they were incompetent without servants, the Sjobergs came up with a new plan. Try to make everyone else at MBA do things for them. This didn't work out so well either. In the first place, they never asked us to do anything. They ordered us to do it. Second, all the adults had plenty to do already. They couldn't just drop everything to make breakfast for a bunch of helpless rich people. So everyone told the Sjobergs they'd have to handle things on their own. Except Chiang Hai-tek, who bluntly informed Lars Sjoberg that he should get off his lazy butt before Chiang drove his foot up it. From there, things only got worse. None of the Sjobergs had been very nice to begin with. Now, realizing they'd spent more than some entire countries made in a year to end up in their own private hell, they turned on us, becoming even nastier than before. Any encounter with them was a bad one. The only Mooney any of them remotely got along with was Cesar Marquez, and that's only because Lily Sjoberg had a crush on him. And since Cesar didn't like his little brother much, the Sjoberg kids were worse to Roddy than to anyone else. When I found them in the rec room, Patton and Lily had just swiped Roddy's hologoggles and were playing keep away.
"Come on, give them back,"
Roddy whined as he haplessly ran back and forth between the twins.
"I was just about to liberate Titan from the pernicious Skrinks."
"Ooh," Patton Sjoberg taunted. "If you're such a big hero, why can't you get your goggles back?"
"Why do you guys have to be such jerks?"
Roddy mewled.
"Why do you have to be such a loser?"
Lily shot back. Normally, I might have hustled off before anyone noticed me. I didn't like the idea of being on Patton Sjoberg's bad side. In addition to being as mean as a rabid badger, he was also quite strong. He spent most of his time at MBA in the gym, bulking up his muscles. His biceps had grown by an inch in the last 4 weeks. And Lily was pretty strong herself, surprisingly tall and broad for a girl. But I needed a favor from Roddy, and Roddy wasn't much for helping anyone but himself, so I figured I'd get on his good side. Roddy made a desperate lunge for Patton, who flipped the goggles over his head. Given the low gravity, they sailed high into the air. I cocked my legs and launched myself as hard as I could. On Earth, my vertical jump was about 2 feet. On the moon, it's 4 times that. I flew over Lily's head and snatched the goggles before she could. Unfortunately, even after 6 months, I was still mastering low gravity. I flew much farther than I'd expected, crashed into the wall, and tumbled back down to the floor. Still, I managed to keep a hold on the goggles. When I got to my feet, the Steelbergs were flanking me, glaring hatefully with their beady blue eyes.
"Look who thinks he's a hero now," Patton scoffed. "Give him back, Dash."
He reached for the goggles, but I yanked them away. "They're not yours."
"They're not yours either," Lily said. "We're trying to have some fun here, and you're ruining it, so why don't you blast off and leave us alone?"
"Why don't you go instead?" I asked. "I'll bet Roddy was here first." Patton scowled, his muscles flexed, stretching the fabric of his shirt.
"Hand over the goggles," he said. "Trust me, you do not want to make enemies with me."
I turned to face him, and as I did, I caught a glimpse of my reflection in the slim screen. Behind my back, Lily Steelberg was coiling to strike. "You're right," I said. "I don't. But that shouldn't mean I have to give you whatever you want."
"Then we'll just take it," Patton sprang at me.
At the same time, in the reflection, I saw his sister do the same. I was ready for them, though. As they both came at me, I launched myself again. I soared out of Patton and Lily's path, and they slammed into each other, clocking heads so hard that I could practically hear their tiny brains rattle around in their skulls. This time, I stuck the landing, alighting perfectly by Roddy. "Here you go," I said, valiantly handing over his goggles. He didn't even say thanks. He was too busy watching the Steelbergs. Patton and Lily staggered a moment before regaining their balance, then wheeled on me. Lily's nose had gotten bloodied in their collision, while Patton now had a fat lip. Patton put his fingers to his mouth, then pulled them away, bloody. A tiny shard of white sat on one fingertip.
"You chipped my tooth," he yelled.
Although with his fat lip, it sounded like toof.
"I didn't do anything," I countered. "You attacked me."
"You two are gonna pay for this," Patton growled.
"Me?" Roddy gulped. "I didn't have anything to do with this. Dash is the one you want."
And then, even though I'd just come to his aid, the weasel scurried out of the rec room, leaving me on my own with the Nordic nightmares. Neither Patton nor Lily went after him. Instead, they both marched toward me.
"You break my tooth," Patton said. "I break your head."
I stared at them, unable to believe things had come to this. The Steelbergs were doing their best to look menacing, but with blood trickling from Lily's nose and smeared over Patton's broken teeth, they both looked even stranger than usual. You see, Patton and Lily are virtually the only pure white people my age I've ever met. Everyone else I know is a blend. Me and Violet, for example, black mom, white dad. Or the Brahmaputra Marquez family, Indian mom, Latino dad. Or Kira, Asian mom, black dad. Or Riley Bach, back on Earth, Korean-Italian mom, Irish-Sri Lankan-Peruvian Choctaw dad. The Steelbergs, however, are pure Northern European Caucasian stock, with blonde hair and blue eyes and skin so pale it looks like the belly of a fish. Mom and Dad have some friends like that from their generation, and my grandparents say it was pretty common when they were young, and I've been told that back when my great-grandparents were kids, people of different races couldn't even marry each other in America. I know that's true, but it still seems impossible. Every kid I've ever known was some shade of brown, so to me, on a normal day, the snow-white Steelbergs were strange. Now, with their sneering, blood-smeared faces, they looked like things from one of Roddy's intergalactic virtual reality games. I held out my hands, signaling Patton and Lily to calm down.
"Hold on now. Can we talk about this?"
To my surprise, the Steelbergs stopped right in front of me.
"Sure," Patton said. "Let's talk."
"Really?" I asked. "Okay, look, I'm very sorry you got hurt." I almost didn't see Lily's fist coming. The Steelbergs hadn't stopped out of any sense of kindness. They'd only done it so I'd let my guard down. Plus, I was focused on Patton, thinking that if anyone threw a punch, it'd be him. While Lily looked gentler, however, she could be just as nasty. I ducked to the side. Lily's knuckles grazed my ear. She sailed past me, and instead of connecting with my face, her fist slammed into the door jamb. Lily howled in pain. Patton dove for me. I sprang out of his way, once again sailing higher than I would have on Earth, and landed in the hall, where I took off, bounding as fast as I could. Patton tumbled to the floor, but quickly righted himself and came after me. Lily followed us, cradling her wounded fist, yelling,
"Get him, Patton! Smash his stupid face in!"
You can't really run in low gravity. Running requires keeping your feet on the ground, which is impossible to do when every step sends you flying through the air. Patton and I were still trying, though, which meant we ended up looking ridiculous, pinwheeling our legs in the air like cartoon characters that had just run off a cliff. Patton actually had the advantage, though.
Because he was bigger, he hit the ground more, which meant he was closing the gap on me. We reached the main airlock. Even now, more than an hour after the Raptor's arrival, the adults were still hard at work unloading the rocket. The outdoor crew had delivered a new load of cargo to the airlock, and other people were moving it into the station. The staging area was full of shrink-wrapped bales of new supplies. Dehydrated food packets, robot replacement parts, medical supplies, sanitary wipes, toilet paper, and the highly anticipated fresh fruit and vegetables. Half a dozen adults were shuttling the cargo about. Dr. Jenke stepped right in my path, holding a huge block of food. It was 3 feet square, the kind of thing you'd normally see on a forklift. On Earth, it would have probably weighed 200 pounds. On the moon, it was less than 40, so Dr. Jenke could lift it by himself. Still, because it was so big, it nearly blocked the entire hall. I didn't have time to stop. But I could go over it. In low gravity, you can run along walls. You can't do it for long, but I didn't have to. I sprang up, hit the wall with my feet, and charged a few steps, clearing the bale before dropping to the floor again. Behind me, Patton, whose brain was more dense than his muscles, tried to stop instead. But his inertia carried him forward, and he slammed right into the bale. His legs went out from under him. He landed flat on his back. And then the huge bale, knocked free from Dr. Jenke's hands, landed right on top of him. There was a sickening crunch, followed by a scream of disgust from Patton. All the adults rushed to his aid, lifting the crate off him. I thought the crunch might have come from Patton's nose breaking. Instead, it turned out to be 3 cartons of fresh eggs cracking on his head. By the time Patton wriggled free, the smashed yolks had already oozed through the shrink wrap, coating his head in yellow goo. A bag of dried coconut had also burst open on impact, and the shavings were now stuck in the eggs, making Patton look like a mangy poodle. The adults gasped in horror. Not because of how Patton appeared, but because we'd just lost our only fresh eggs and a good bit of coconut. Patton staggered to his feet, blinded by the raw egg that had oozed into his eyes. "Dash!" he bellowed. "I'm gonna kill you!" I tried to slip away before he regained his sight, only to feel a sudden vice-like grip on my arm. "What have you done?" Nina demanded.
"Me?" I asked. "I didn't do anything. You heard Patton. He was trying to kill me."
"I was not," Patton blubbered in his defense. Since he couldn't see Nina, he mistakenly faced the wrong way, delivering his argument to a wall.
"First that little freak breaks my tooth, then he does this."
Lily hurried to her brother's side.
"Look at him, Nina. He's covered in egg."
"He started this," I argued. "I was only defending myself."
Nina spun me around to face her.
"You're on probation as of this moment."
"Only me?" I asked. "Why isn't Patton in trouble, too?"
"Because your parents didn't shell out $500 million to come here," Dr. Jenke muttered. Everyone else laughed, except Nina. Instead, she grew even angrier and directed it at me.
"I thought my orders were clear. Anyone who doesn't have cargo duty is to stay out of this area so things like this don't happen."
She stabbed a finger at the mess on the floor.
"So I'm going to give you another order, Dashiell, and I expect you to follow it this time. Go to my quarters, now."
I had no choice but to obey. I slunk back through the staging area, feeling everyone's eyes on me. I got the sense they all knew I wasn't really to blame, but no one wanted to get on Nina's bad side, or the Sjobergs, by sticking up for me at the moment. Only Patton seemed pleased.
"Sucks to be you,"
he chuckled as I passed him. "At least I don't look like an omelet," I shot back. Patton stopped laughing.
"You better watch your back," he growled. "I'll be up there soon," Nina told me. "Right after I take care of the mess you've made."
I didn't bother to look back. I continued past the airlock, then climbed the stairs to Nina's residence. Once I got there, however, I found her door was locked. I had no choice but to sit on the catwalk and wait. Below me, everyone in the staging area went back to their business. At the end of the hall, behind them all, I caught a glimpse of Zan Perfonic by the science pod. She shot a quick glance in my direction. I couldn't quite read it from that distance, but I got the idea she was trying to comfort me somehow. I still felt lousy, though. I'd failed miserably at my first assignment. I'd gone to ask for Roddy's help hacking into the computer and had ended up on probation. Of course, that wasn't entirely my fault. I hoped Roddy might come by, looking to thank me for helping him out, but there was no sign of him. I figured he was probably in the mess hall, waiting for fresh food to arrive.
"Hey,"
Kira said. I glanced toward her voice. She was standing in the doorway of her residence. It was only a few feet away, but it was far enough so that Nina, who was still in the staging area, couldn't see her.
"What was all that about?"
she asked. The Seobergs were picking on Roddy Marquez, I reported. I tried to help him, and they came after me instead.
They're the tourists?
Yeah. You'll learn to hate them soon enough. Kira laughed.
That was nice of you, standing up for Roddy.
I shrugged, not feeling like getting into the reasons why I'd stood up for Roddy. For the moment, I wanted to look like a good guy.
I guess. So, is he going to hack the computer for you?
I spun toward Kira, surprised. She instantly turned away, her cheeks flushing red, as though embarrassed she'd made a mistake.
How did you... I began. I didn't mean to overhear, Kira said quickly. Really, I was trying to nap, like I said I was going to, only the wall between your room and ours isn't very thick. I could hear your conversation through it.
I frowned, concerned. It had never occurred to me that anyone could hear through our walls. Kira's room had been empty the whole time my family had been at MBA, and Nina had never said anything. Although it now occurred to me that Nina had been heading to our room that morning right before I told my parents I thought Dr. Holtz had been murdered. If Nina had been eavesdropping on us, that would explain how she'd known about my suspicions.
How much did you hear?
Not everything, Kira admitted.
I was trying not to listen. Honest. In fact, I could only hear you. Maybe you were closer to that wall than the other person.
I was, I said, feeling relieved. Kira hadn't heard Zan at all.
But a few parts came through anyway, Kira went on.
Which parts? I asked.
That Dr. Holtz's death wasn't an accident, and that you need to hack the computer to get some evidence.
I glanced back toward the staging area. Thankfully, no one was close enough to overhear us. In fact, no one was even looking our way. They were busily moving cargo while Nina supervised cleanup of the eggs.
Please don't tell anyone, I pleaded. Oh, I won't, Kira said quickly. Under one condition.
I looked back toward her.
What's that? You let me help.
Excerpt from the Official Residence Guide to Moonbase Alpha, copyright 2040 by National Aeronautics and Space Administration. Video Logs. As a lunar knot, you will serve as an ambassador between MBA and Earth. Your selection as one of the lucky few to live on the moon has no doubt already brought you plenty of attention, and as you serve at MBA, millions of Earthlings will be eager to hear what you are doing. To that end, it is required that each lunar knot keep a video log to update his or her fans as to the goings-on at MBA. It is suggested that this be done once a week, at minimum, although you are certainly free to update yours far more often. Have fun with this. Don't merely give a dull recitation of the week's events. Instead, spice it up. Let your fans get to see the real you. Tell stories. Show off your low-gravity juggling skills. Or do karaoke. As long as it's fun to watch, we don't care what you do. With a few exceptions, lunar knots are prohibited from insulting, disparaging, slandering, or otherwise saying negative things about MBA or any of its inhabitants.
Chapter 8. Unexpected Help. Lunar Day 188, afternoon.
I knew Dr. Holtz, Kira told me, back on Earth. He and my father worked on some projects together. They told us about his death as we were landing. They said it was an accident, that he made an unauthorized moonwalk, but that doesn't sound right to me. I ran my fingers through my hair, worried. Nina had warned me not to tell people Dr. Holtz had been murdered, and I'd already done it. Of course, it wasn't exactly my fault. How was I supposed to know the lousy lunar contractors had made the walls too thin? But still, if Nina found out about this, on top of all the other things she was upset at me about, for all I knew, she'd sentence me to remain on the moon until I was 60. Look, I said, I'm not really supposed to be investigating this at all. Who were you talking to in your room then? Kira asked. I got the idea it was someone in security. It's hard to explain. From where I sat on the catwalk, I was still visible to everyone down by the airlock, including Nina. So I faced forward, away from Kira, and templed my fingers in front of my mouth, trying to give the impression that I wasn't talking to anyone at all.
But it was an adult, right?
Right. So then you've been asked to do it. It's not like we'd be snooping around on our own. Well, we'd still be in trouble if we got caught.
Let's not get caught then, Kira grinned.
I'm serious, I told her. You just got here. You don't want to get off on the wrong foot with Nina.
I'll be careful. I can handle this. I've done worse.
I was about to ask, like what? But before I could, down in the staging area, Nina turned toward me, as though she had sensed I was talking about her. She couldn't see Kira, but the sight of me simply sitting on the catwalk was enough to get her angry.
I told you to wait in my office, she yelled. It's locked, I called back. Nina scowled and kept staring at me. Kira took a step back, making sure she was out of Nina's eyeline, then mused, I wonder if she had something to do with Dr. Holtz's death. It's kind of suspicious, ordering everyone not to investigate a murder, isn't it? I started to deny this, but then thought about it. I put my hand over my mouth, trying to look thoughtful as I covered my lips. You're right. It is. So let me help, then. I'm pretty good with computers myself. Can you hack? Yeah, a bit. What do you need? The security tapes of Dr. Holtz going out the airlock this morning. Kira frowned. Oh, that's not going to be easy. I know. I'm not sure if even Roddy can do it. In the staging area, Nina started heading my way. Nina's coming, I warned. Better go before she sees you. Kira didn't question this. She quickly ducked back into her room. I'll see what I can get you. There was a gleam of excitement in her eye as she closed the door. Nina reached the base of the stairs. If Kira had been a half second slower, Nina would have seen her. Instead, Nina only saw me, sitting by myself. She came up the steps to the catwalk. I hopped to my feet to meet her. Who are you talking to? Nina asked. Apparently, covering my mouth with my hand hadn't fooled her. Violet, I lied, pointing down to the rec room. She was down there. She came out into the hall and wanted to know where our parents were. I told her, and she went back in. Nina cased both levels of the hallway, trying to determine if I was lying. The halls were empty. There was no one else around for her to presume I'd been talking to. Nina shifted her attention back to me. I want you to go into your room and stay there. You're grounded until I say otherwise. What? I asked. You can't do that. You're not my mom. At this base, I have the authority to delegate any punishment I see fit. I gave you a direct order to stay out of the staging area, and you disobeyed it. What was I supposed to do? Let the Sjobergs beat me up? Do you know how difficult it was to requisition those eggs? Nina demanded. NASA didn't want to send them. I spent hours working every angle I could. They were going to be a treat for everyone up here, a special reward for their hard work. And now that's not going to happen. Every last egg is broken, and after this disaster, NASA will never agree to ship any more, which means it will be 3 years until I taste a fresh egg again. Oh, I thought. So that's what all this is about. For all her posturing that I had disobeyed orders, Nina was really upset that she'd lost her precious eggs. Sure, she was claiming she'd requested them for everyone, but she wouldn't have spent hours on it unless she'd really wanted them herself. I understood where she was coming from, though. We all have our own food obsessions at MBA. You have no idea what you'll really miss until you get here. Personally, I'd have thought I would want ice cream more than anything else, but now that I'm on the moon, for some reason, I always find myself craving picante sauce. I couldn't imagine what would happen if a jar had been shipped up for me and then ended up broken. I might have been desperate enough to lick everything up off the floor. And yet I was still ticked off that I was getting punished for this, while the Sjobergs were getting off scot-free because they were rich. What am I supposed to do in my room all day? I asked. You haven't updated your video log in over a week, Nina told me. Start with that. That'll only take 5 minutes, I protested. No, Nina said. I want you to take your time with this. Think about it very carefully. Don't say one word about Dr. Holtz's death being suspicious. You mean I can't say anything about his death? You're welcome to talk about it. In fact, I encourage you to. The public knows about the death by now, and they're eager to hear what we all have to say. So tell them what a great man Dr. Holtz was. Let them know you're upset he's gone. But do not, under any circumstances, even hint that there might have been foul play. I'm going to review your video before you post it, and if I don't like it, I'll have you do it again. So don't take this lightly. No crazy stories about moon dragons or finding hordes of green cheese today. Is that clear? Crystal, I muttered, then headed into my room and slammed the door behind me. Nina might have been upset about her eggs, but she'd used the incident to manipulate me in a big way. By grounding me, she was shutting down any chance I had to investigate Dr. Holtz's death, or to recruit anyone else to help me. And by demanding that I compose a video log about Dr. Holtz, Nina was forcing me to publicly back her side of the story. If I decided to push the murder angle later, I'd come across as fickle. I found myself thinking about Kira's suggestion. If Nina truly had been involved in Dr. Holtz's death, she was certainly in a great position to cover her tracks. She was doing everything in her power to muzzle me and derail any investigation.
I sat at the slim screen table. Instead of starting my video log, I said, "Computer, get me all information you can on Nina Stack."
"It would be my pleasure,"
the computer exclaimed. It instantly opened a comlink and brought up a dozen web pages about Nina. I figured there was no harm in using a comlink now. It wasn't like Nina could punish me any more than she had already. Now that the link was open, I discovered that I had hundreds of messages as well. Virtually everyone I knew on Earth had reached out to me after hearing about Dr. Holtz's death. I read a few. They all said basically the same thing. "Heard the news. Thinking about you. Let me know how you are." Riley Bach had left a dozen messages herself. With all the excitement, I'd forgotten that I'd promised to call her that day. It would have to wait a little longer, though. I had investigating to do. I scanned through the web pages about Nina, but there was nothing I didn't already know. Either Nina had never done anything wrong in her life, or NASA had completely whitewashed her history. Whatever the case, every biography of Nina was glowing. She was a decorated soldier, a clever scientist, a highly respected employee, and the top choice to command MBA. Competent, straight-laced, and honest as could be. But then, all of our official bios read like that. First, NASA had sought out extremely well-behaved people to serve at MBA, not wanting any chance of scandal. And then, if we had ever misbehaved, even a bit, NASA had scrubbed any mention of that from our records. For example, at school on Earth, I'd been sent to the principal's office plenty of times, but according to my bio, I'd been a model student. It made me sound like a Boy Scout. However, someone at MBA obviously wasn't as moral as their bio claimed, because they'd murdered Dr. Holtz. Either they'd hidden their true nature, or NASA had hidden it for them. Whatever the case, I probably wasn't going to find any dirt on them online. "Has anyone at MBA ever done anything wrong?" I sighed.
"Your sister once put chewing gum in the rehydrator," the computer replied.
Right. I'd forgotten about that. Violet had broken the machine, forcing us all to eat non-hydrated food cubes for 2 days until Mr. Grissom could fix it. I meant the adults.
"Lars Sjoberg is rumored to have done some shady things in his business dealings."
I straightened up, annoyed at myself for not thinking of the Sjobergs first. "Show me what you've got." Hundreds of web pages popped open, so quickly I worried they might overwhelm the comlink. I spent the next hour reading through them. In his business, Lars had been accused of everything from ignoring environmental laws to bribing government officials to violating oil embargoes. However, none of the charges had ever stuck. Inevitably, someone below Lars at his company ended up taking the fall, while Lars himself came out unscathed. He was known to say, "When you're on the top of the heap, lots of people will try to drag you down to their level." And yet it was hard to believe that a fundamentally good person would have been accused of so many bad things. Instead, Lars came across as someone who'd behaved badly time and time again, but who had the wealth and power to avoid getting in trouble. Could Lars Sjoberg have killed Dr. Holtz? It wasn't hard to imagine him committing murder. He was basically the worst person I'd ever met. Plus, he had a volcanic temper and was prone to fits of rage that shook the entire base. And now that I thought about it, Patton and Lily Sjoberg were also volatile and violent. I wondered if either one of them was capable of murder, too. I rubbed my eyes, which were bleary from reading. "Computer, can you bring up the news?" I asked.
"Of course, mein Herr."
The webpage for the New York Times appeared. When my parents were kids, there were lots of newspapers, one for almost every city. Now, in America, only the Times is left. As I'd suspected, Dr. Holtz's death was the lead story. I tapped on the headline, which instantly linked to a video report. Footage of Dr. Holtz training for his mission to MBA appeared, while a reporter began, "Dr. Ronald Holtz, a lunar nut on Moonbase Alpha and a highly respected professor, died this morning during a routine moonwalk at the base." "Routine?" I repeated, surprised. Obviously NASA was covering up the real details of the death, or maybe Nina had hidden the details from NASA. A telephone's ring interrupted the news report, then a message flashed. "Incoming call, Riley Bach." After so much time focusing on the Sjobergs, I was ready for a friendly face. I accepted the call. The news story automatically muted and shifted to the background, while Riley's face popped up in a central window. Her sister, Eliza, who was 2 years younger than us, was right next to her. They were speaking to me on Riley's smartwatch, while their car automatically drove them someplace, probably the beach, knowing the box. Ever since cars started driving themselves, parents have been letting them chaperone kids. It was gorgeously sunny, as usual. The girls were wearing bikini tops, board shorts, and sunglasses. The phone service on the moon isn't bad,
In fact, I can get a better connection from MBA than I could from a lot of places in Hawaii. However, the signal has to travel 238,900 miles between Earth and the Moon, so it takes a few seconds between the time you speak and the time the other person hears it. Then there are another few seconds after they speak until you hear them. Originally, this was difficult to deal with. We ended up talking over each other all the time. But after a while, we got used to it. Since I speak to Riley every few days, she knows the routine.
"Hey," she said, "is everything all right? I left you a ton of messages."
"Sorry, I didn't get them until an hour ago. They wandered us off the comlink."
"Oh, guess it's been an exciting day up there."
"Yeah, for once." NASA usually has sensors eavesdrop on our personal calls, but I've learned I can get away with insulting the base if I make it sound like sarcasm.
"I'm serious," Riley said. "Are you doing okay? Did you know the guy?"
"There are only 22 people here. Of course I knew him."
"You know what she means," Eliza said. "Did you hang out with him, or was he just some old coot who never paid attention to you?"
My eyes flicked to the news footage of Dr. Holtz. It was now showing him boarding the rocket for the launch to the moon. He looked as happy as anyone could be, beaming in his spacesuit, waving cheerfully to the cameras. "Somewhere in between," I admitted. "Since he was a lot older, he hung out more with the other adults than any of us kids, but he was always really nice to me. Everyone really liked him."
"Oh," Riley said. "Well, I'm sorry he's gone. Are you guys going to have a funeral for him?"
"To be honest, I have no idea. I don't know if anyone's even thought about that yet."
"Are you going to bury him there?" Eliza asked. "Is he going to be, like, the first dead guy laid to rest on the moon?"
"I don't think so," I said.
"So what are you going to do?" Eliza demanded. "Shoot him into space?"
"I doubt it, though I think Dr. Holtz might have liked that idea."
"Well, it's all over the news down here," Riley reported. "Like being the first human to die on the moon makes you a hero somehow, so we figured we'd check in."
"Thanks," I said. "What are you up to? Surfing?"
"You know it. Kohala. Looks like an epic break today. Check it."
Riley turned her smartwatch so I could see they were arriving at the beach. On cue, a perfect wave came in, a beautiful blue curl. I groaned, missing Earth terribly.
"Come on, don't rub it in like that."
"Rub it in?" Eliza asked.
"Dude, you're on the moon." "You hit 6 G's on a rocket," Riley added. "Kohala's probably as exciting as riding a merry-go-round compared to that."
"Yeah," I said, trying to sell it to the sensors. "You're right, but I still miss that place."
"Ha,"
Riley said, not believing me at all. "You're famous and you're having the adventure of a lifetime. I get to go surfing every once in a while. Trust me, my life blows compared to yours."
I desperately wanted to tell them the truth, that I wasn't lucky at all, that all the amazing stories they'd heard about life on the moon, none of which had come from me, by the way, were merely hype and public relations. Instead, I could only say,
"Your life's not so bad.
Mr. Cochran's going to flunk me in English, and Dad wants me to work in his office this summer," Riley shot back. "What's good about that?"
She still had her smartwatch aimed toward the beach. I noticed several friends from school there, pulling on wetsuits and waxing their boards, feeling the sand on their toes and the warm sun on their faces. In the distance, a surfer shot through the tunnel of a wave.
"It's all good," I told her. "Trust me."
The Bach girls' car pulled into the sandlot by the beach and self-parked. Lori Yee Cohen, one of my classmates, set down her surfboard and waved hello to them.
"Check it out," Riley said, pointing to her watch. "I'm talking to Dash Gibson, in space."
"Awesome,"
Lori exclaimed, then waved to me. "Hey, Dash, how's the moon?"
"Great," I lied. "How's Earth?"
"All right, I guess. We miss you."
This from a girl who hadn't even known I went to her school until my family got tapped for MBA. Then I got famous, and everyone suddenly started acting like we'd been friends our whole lives. I don't mind when Riley milks her friendship with me for social status. We really are friends, and I'd do the same if she were the one on the moon. But it bugs me when other people do it.
"I miss all you guys, too," I said, just to be polite.
"Take it easy."
Lori picked up her board again and continued to the water's edge. Riley turned the watch back so I could see her. She now looked slightly concerned. I probably hadn't done a great job of hiding my homesickness.
"You sure you're all right?"
"Yeah," I said, forcing a smile. "I'm fine."
"Hey, some new girl came up there today, right?" Eliza asked. "Did you meet her yet?"
"Yeah, I met her. I'm her official welcomer."
"What's she like?" asked Riley.
"She's nice."
"Ooh,"
Eliza crooned. "You like her. Are you going to kiss her?"
"Don't be such a dork," Riley shoved her sister out of the frame.
Dash has a girlfriend, Eliza sang, unfazed, on the moon.
Something suddenly caught my eye in the news report on Dr. Holtz, which was still running in the background on the slim screen. I wasn't quite sure what it was, as I'd been focused on the beach instead, but it was enough to make me sit up, aware I just missed something important. Riley must have noticed my expression change.
What's wrong?
I tapped the slim screen, pausing the news report on an image of a somewhat younger Dr. Holtz dressed for a fancy party.
Nothing, I said. I just have to jump.
Oh, well, I gotta go myself, Riley told me. The waves are calling. Take it easy up there. If you start freaking out or anything, you know where to find me. Have a good ride for me, I said. You know I will. Aloha, Mooney.
Have fun with your girlfriend, Eliza shouted.
Riley clicked off. I stared at her final image. Sand, sun, and beach, feeling desperately homesick for a few more moments. I was about to return to the news report when a thought occurred to me. When I'd overheard Dr. Holtz's phone call, there hadn't been any 2-second gaps in the conversation. True, I hadn't been able to hear the person on the other end of the call, but still, you can tell. Talking to someone when you have to wait a few seconds for an answer always sounds a little stilted. But Dr. Holtz's conversation hadn't been that way at all, which meant he hadn't been talking to someone on Earth. He'd been talking to someone on the moon. I wondered who it could be. Who else had been up at that time of night? And why had they used the phone rather than meeting somewhere on the base? I sighed. Trapped in my room, there was no way I could pursue that line of investigation any further. So I returned my attention to the news report, rewinding it 30 seconds to see what I'd missed. The report was recapping Dr. Holtz's life, and, judging from the photos of him, was somewhere near the last decade. Dr. Holtz's hair was graying, but not white like it had ultimately become. Various shots of him working at NASA flashed by, while the reporter said, "In more recent years, Dr. Holtz was a key player in designing Moonbase Alpha, drawing upon his research and his own experiences in space to help create the best lunar living environment for humans." The video then shifted to the party I'd glimpsed, which turned out to be an event in Dr. Holtz's honor. "Dr. Holtz was widely respected for his work," the reporter continued, "garnering such awards as the National Medal of Science and NASA's Exceptional Scientific Achievement Medal for his work on the effects of low gravity on the human body." "Pause," I told the computer. The same thing that had caught my eye before had done so again. It was so fleeting, I didn't even know what it was, but this time I'd been alert enough to stop the news report in the right place, giving me time to examine the scene. Dr. Holtz was up on a podium, wearing a nice suit, while Caroline Lesser, the chief administrator of NASA, draped a medal around his neck. In the room around them, hundreds of fellow NASA employees were also dressed to the nines, seated at dinner tables and applauding enthusiastically. Well, not everyone was applauding enthusiastically. While all the other guests looked pleased, one person seated at a front table didn't seem happy at all. I might never have noticed him, but he stood out because he had a mohawk. I tapped on the image. "Enlarge," I told the computer. The computer zoomed in on Chang Hai Tech, enhancing and adjusting the resolution until Chang's face was as bright and clear as if I'd been sitting right next to him. Close up, he didn't seem merely unhappy. He was glaring at Dr. Holtz with complete and total hatred.
Excerpt from the Official Resident's Guide to Moonbase Alpha, copyright 2040 by National Aeronautics and Space Administration.
Dining. Dining at MBA is a communal affair, so every meal is like a party. You'll join all your fellow lunar knots in the mess hall, where you'll be able to select any of hundreds of possible meals. NASA chefs have been perfecting recipes for more than 80 years now, so whatever your taste, there will be plenty of options for you. Choose from old favorites like chicken parmesan, cheese enchiladas, or classic shrimp cocktail. Or try one of our new exciting culinary fusions like Korean duck tacos, lamb curry lasagna, or Peruvian spring rolls. Simply pick your convenient pre-made dining packet, insert it in the rehydrator for 30 seconds, and bon appetit. Best of all, it's free, courtesy of NASA. Eating at MBA is so easy and delicious, you'll be disappointed when you return to Earth.
To respect the dietary restrictions of our lunar knots, before launch, you can also request personally designed meals if you keep kosher or halal, are vegetarian or vegan, or have any other food restrictions. In order to prevent food shortages, please limit yourself to only one meal per dining period.
Chapter 9. Fresh Meat.
Lunar Day 188, Dinner Time. My parents sprang me for dinner. They'd been so busy with their various duties that day that it wasn't till evening that they heard I'd been grounded. Once they did, they were livid at Nina. First, everyone who'd witnessed the raw egg incident had made it clear that Patton Sjoberg was as much to blame as me, if not more, and neither Mom nor Dad felt it was Nina's right to ground me. So come dinner time, I was seated in the mess with everyone else. Normally, I would consider dining at MBA to be as big a punishment as being grounded, but since fresh food had arrived that day, I was actually excited to eat for once. Everyone else was, too. Most nights, the Moonies dribble in at random times to scarf something down as quickly as possible. It's the general theory at MBA that the faster you eat your freeze-dried crud, the less chance you have of actually tasting it. But tonight, the mess was full. Everyone gathered together and eager for their meal. On a normal night, we all prepare our own food. Even Violet can work the rehydrator, so long as she doesn't stick chewing gum in it. But the fresh food took a bit more care. So Nina, Chang, and Mr. Grissom had the honor of prepping it while the rest of us waited. It was too crowded for my family to have a table to ourselves. Kira's father and Daphne Merritt sat with us. Kira was the only person at MBA who hadn't shown up for dinner.
"Where's your daughter?" Violet asked Dr. Howard bluntly.
"Hmm?" asked Dr. Howard, who'd been staring off into space. He looked around and seemed to notice for the first time that Kira was missing. However, he didn't seem concerned about this.
"Oh, she's off exploring her new home, I suppose."
"That shouldn't take long," I muttered. "This place isn't big."
"That's one of the things I like about it," Daphne said cheerfully. Other than Violet, Daphne is the only person who seems continually thrilled to be at the moon base. Unlike Violet, though, Daphne is fully aware of all the base's faults. She simply doesn't care.
"It's cozy here, don't you think? Much nicer than a big, empty moon base."
"Yeah," Violet said. "I like it here, too." No one else seconded the thought. I wondered if Kira was off trying to hack the computer somewhere. This was probably the best chance she'd have. With everyone in the mess, she had the rest of MBA to herself. Across the room, I caught sight of Zan, sitting at a table with some of the other temps who'd come in that day. Two solar panel contractors and a woman who I hadn't been introduced to yet. While the others chatted, Zan caught my eye and gave me a quick wink, letting me know we were still in this together. Dad turned to Dr. Howard.
"You ought to track Kira down. There won't be another meal like this for a while. She really shouldn't miss it."
He pointed toward the kitchen where Nina, Chang, and Mr. Grissom were busily preparing dinner. Actual, honest-to-goodness hamburgers. They couldn't grill the burgers at MBA, of course. We can't have any open flames, as they'd suck up all our precious oxygen. And if the base catches fire, there isn't anywhere else for us to go. So the burgers were all cooked back in Houston, where they really know they're grilling, and then vacuum-sealed in plastic sheets. These look weird, like huge, meaty button candies, but the plastic preserves the flavor amazingly well. Now our chefs were microwaving the burgers as quickly as they could and serving them up with sides of relatively fresh carrots, pickles, and coleslaw. The Sjobergs had selfishly demanded to be served first, even before the kids. They'd just received their dinner, and the smell of cooked meat was intoxicating. My mouth was watering so much, I was worried I'd drool on the table. Virtually everyone else in the mess was equally mesmerized, eagerly waiting the moment when they'd get their food. Dr. Howard, however, had already checked out mentally again.
"Hm?" he asked once more. "Kira? Oh, I think she's a vegetarian."
"You're not sure?" Mom asked, surprised.
Dr. Howard shook his head, smiling vacantly.
"Who can keep track of what a 12-year-old girl likes and doesn't like?"
There was a soft ping, and then my smartwatch displayed a text. It was from Eliza Bach. "How's your new girlfriend?"
"Dash, no messaging at dinner," Mom said.
"I know." I didn't feel like responding to Eliza anyhow. I pretended to turn my watch off, while actually setting it to silent mode. I glanced toward the Sjobergs, my stomach grumbling. The entire family was making a disgusting show of enjoying their food, groaning with delight at each bite and smacking their lips.
"This is absolutely exquisite,"
Sonia announced. Her lips, which had been overinflated by a plastic surgeon back on Earth, were now painted red with barbecue sauce, making her look like a tropical fish. Lars Sjoberg and his children only grunted in response, not even lifting their heads from their plates. A microwave dinged. Everyone else in the mess turned toward it expectantly, like dogs who'd seen a squirrel. Now that the Sjobergs had claimed their burgers, The base children got priority on the next round. Mr. Grissom set the burgers and slaw out on plates, and then Nina and Chang delivered the goods. Nina brought two plates to our table, acting nice and friendly, as though she hadn't spent the entire day chastising me. "Here you go," she announced to Violet and me. "Enjoy." She took a step away, then looked back and asked, "By the way, Dash, have you done your video log yet?" I'd forgotten all about it, but I stayed calm and lied convincingly. "I'm still working on it. I'm taking my time to give you exactly what you asked for." Nina's eyes narrowed briefly, like she knew I was lying and wanted to bust me, but then she smiled and said, "Thanks. I'm looking forward to seeing it." As annoyed as I was with Nina, I still could have hugged her for bringing me that burger. I'd never seen anything as delicious in my life. My salivary glands immediately went into overdrive. Mom, still angry at Nina herself, glared after the base commander as she headed back to get more burgers. "Look at her, acting like she's Mary Poppins after the way she treated Dash today. I ought to report her to NASA for overstepping her bounds." "Now, now," Dad cautioned. "This has been a rough day for all of us, and I'm sure Nina is under far more stress than anyone else put together."
"She didn't have to take it out on our son," Mom groused.
Before eating my burger, I looked everyone else at the table. So did Violet. Unlike the Sjobergs, even she had manners.
"Can I start eating?" she asked.
"Sure," Dad said. "Both of you. Dig in."
"Oh, boy,"
Violet cried. She snatched her burger off the plate and took a huge bite. "Anyone want a bite of mine?" I offered.
"Well, aren't you the gentleman?" Daphne said. "Go on ahead now. I've been waiting weeks for this. Another few minutes won't kill me."
She then winced, embarrassed.
"Ooh, bad choice of words, right? Given the events today, I didn't mean to be so callous."
"We know you didn't," Mom said. I launched into my standard procedure for eating fresh food, trying to make it last as long as possible. I sliced off a thin sliver of burger and rolled it around in my mouth. It was incredible. The flavor was so overwhelming it almost made me woozy. Across the room, Chiang Hai-tek placed burgers in front of the Marquez kids. Roddy pounced on his before it even hit the table and crammed half of it into his mouth in a single bite.
"Did Chang ever work with Dr. Holtz before they both came here?" I asked.
"Yes," Dad said. "They collaborated on a project at NASA a few years back." I slipped another sliver of hamburger into my mouth. "Did they like each other?" Mom looked at me curiously.
"Why do you ask?"
I shrugged, trying to appear as though the thought had only popped into my head that moment. "I don't know. Chang hasn't seemed that upset about Dr. Holtz." "That doesn't mean he isn't upset," Mom informed me. "You know how macho Chang is. He's probably afraid of letting his guard down. But I can assure you, he liked Ronald as much as anyone here."
Not quite," Dad said.
Mom and Daphne turned to him, surprised. Dr. Howard didn't. He was staring at something on the ceiling.
"What do you mean?" Daphne asked.
Dad lowered his voice so no one at the surrounding tables could overhear us. "Chang claims Dr. Holt stole an idea of his."
"When?" Mom asked.
"About 5 years ago," Dad replied. "Chang had some idea about how to improve human oxygen consumption in space. Don't ask me to explain it. I can't. It's way too complicated. Anyhow, since Chang isn't a biologist, he approached Dr. Holtz with the idea. And the next thing he knew, Dr. Holtz was presenting the idea as his own." Daphne gasped.
"I can't believe Dr. Holtz would ever do something like that."
Dad shrugged. "I'm only telling you what Chang said. I can't imagine Dr. Holtz stealing someone's idea either, but I have just as much trouble imagining Chang making up the story."
"It must have been a misunderstanding," Mom said.
"That's my guess, too," Dad agreed. "Whatever the case, though, I'm sure it's all water under the bridge. I don't think NASA would have brought both Dr. Holtz and Chang up here if there was still bad blood between them." I wondered if that was true. Maybe Chang had simply pretended to have forgiven Dr. Holtz, not wanting it to prevent him from going to the moon. But was a stolen idea really worth killing a man over? That seemed ridiculous. But then people were doubtlessly killed for ridiculous reasons all the time.
"I'm sure it's all forgotten," Daphne suggested cheerfully.
"How could anyone stay angry at Dr. Holtz? He was such a sweetheart." "Maybe, but he still had his share of people who didn't like him," Dad said. Daphne looked like a child who'd just been told there was no Easter Bunny.
"No."
"I'm not saying he deserved any of it," Dad went on, "but no matter how good a person you are, when you work in academics or at a big political place like NASA,
There are going to be people who don't like you. Even Dr. Holtz had enemies.
Like who? I asked, trying to sound as casual as possible.